Hi, and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, a podcast where I show my husband Gilmore Girls, he shows me Dragon Ball, and we try to find some sort of common ground. I'm Paige.
And I'm Grant.
And this week we watched Season 3, Episode 15 of Gilmore Girls, and Episode 68 of Dragon Ball Z Kai. So Grant, what happened on Gilmore Girls this week?
Well, this week on Gilmore Girls we had like a Rory plot and an Emily plot.
Yep.
So I suppose we'll start with the Emily plot. We're finally paying some lip service to the fact that Trix is around again.
Trix, also known as Gran, who's Lorelai's grandmother.
Yeah. Emily, Richard's mother, Lorelai's grandmother, Rory's great-grandmother. She's, if you'll recall a couple episodes ago, she was in town and she decided, oh, I'm going to, like, move to this area so I can spend more time with my son. And I'm going to be living here from now on. And Emily was terrified because they don't get along. So this episode, Emily's struggle is the fact that she's, Trix, is getting her floor redone or something like that. And so she has to actually stay in the house with Emily and Richard for a few days. She's being her usual awful self, calling every 5 minutes to make sure you have soap in your bathroom, right?
Your towels are Egyptian cotton, right?
Yeah, just, like, being condescending and horrible to Emily. And eventually, the basic conflict comes up because she's going to be hosting a meeting for her version of Emily's clubs.
Yeah, right? It seems like a museum group.
Yeah, or something. Some club of old women. They're going to be meeting, and so she wants to use Emily and Richard's house for this meeting. And she has to change everything because everything's going to be different and everything is awful in their house. And, you know, it simply won't do. And so she sends Emily away to go get new this, new that, and get a slide projector and blah, blah, blah. And don't come back until 6 o'clock because it'll just be in the way. So Lorelai gets roped into this plot because Emily just kind of shows up at the inn. And, like, oh, I wanted to book it for a DAR meeting, yeah. And is just kind of awkwardly hanging around, and Lorelai finally presses and is like, Mom, what's going on? And Emily says, like, tells her, she's not letting me come back to my own home because of all this stuff is happening, and it's driving me insane, and I just can't handle it.
But it's also a giant house, so this is a little ridiculous.
It is a little ridiculous. And so Lorelai actually has to be the voice of reason for Emily and tell her, like, Mom, it's only for a few days. You need to be the bigger person here and just deal with it. And Emily has sort of a moment of uncharacteristic vulnerability with Lorelai and says, like, Richard has been away on business so much and he gets home so late and he's just never really around anymore. And now he's finally around for a little bit, and his mother's taking all of his time, and I know it's silly, but I'm jealous, and I'm lonely. And Lorelai tells her, like, I know, but just stick it out, and I'm sure it'll be okay. So Emily comes home with all of this stuff that she went out and got for Trix, and she opens the door and steps inside, and she sees that Trix has a suitor. There's a man in a purple tracksuit. And they're making out in the middle of the room, in the middle of the living room. And Emily's scandalized and just slowly creeps out of the house without anybody noticing her. And, that's why, Trix told her to stay out until 6 o'clock, is because she was having a man over. And she hides in the bushes until the guy leaves, which unfortunately we don't get to see. And just kind of carries on. So Lorelai shows up at this event later to hand off some stuff she said she was going to bring from the house, and she kind of tries to leave because she doesn't want to get in the middle of all the drama, but Emily ropes her in. And so Emily is like, Trix is still being awful to Emily in front of all her friends, and Emily is kind of being taunting about, like, oh yeah, I caught a viewing of Love in the Afternoon today, isn't that such a nice concept? And trying to kind of hold it over her head, and Trix obviously isn't quite getting it at first. So Lorelai takes Emily into the kitchen and is like, what's going on? Why are you acting weird? And Emily tells her, like, I saw her making out with a guy in a purple tracksuit, and finally I have something to hold over her. Finally, after all these years of her talking down to me. He says, you know, finally, I've got the upper hand in the situation. I've got something to hold over her, and I'm going to use it. And Lorelai says, Mom, she's only going to be here for a few more days. Do you really want to be that person who embarrasses her in front of her friends and her family with something like that? She's keeping it secret for a reason. Just leave it. Let it go. Be the bigger person. And Emily says, you're right. I need to be the bigger person. I'm cool. And they go out there, and Trix immediately has some barb about how, oh, maybe Richard would come home on time if, you know, would come home earlier from work if Emily could serve dinner on time.
And it's just hitting exactly where
it's going right between the ribs, right? And so Emily just blurts out, I saw Trix kissing a man in a tracksuit.
And her friends are scandalized. Her friends are
scandalized. Richard is scandalized. It's this horrible thing. So the next time we see them, Emily is, like, going up to check on Trix because she's laying in bed with, like, a washcloth over her eyes and getting aspirin. Just, it was all so stressful. And Emily says, look, I know that was embarrassing, and I know that you wanted to keep that secret for a reason, and it wasn't my place to tell, and I'm very sorry. I don't know what got into me.
She's legitimately apologizing.
Yeah, she's legitimately apologizing, she says, you know, and she says, like, Trick says, like, I don't think you understand what it's like to be so insulted and humiliated in front of your loved ones. And she says, look, I don't understand exactly what you're going through because I have, you know, thankfully Richard is still here and I haven't had to deal with this situation, but I know what it's like to be humiliated and embarrassed in front of my family, and I understand that you have your pride and that, you know, I need to be mindful of that, but I wish you would be mindful of that for me. I wish you would care that you humiliate me and embarrass me and make me feel small in my own home, because I have my pride too.
Well, and also, I'm lonely too.
Yeah, like, and I'm lonely too. Because Trick says, like, my husband died, and I believe that when you marry for life, and if I were to marry somebody else, that would be dishonoring his memory, but I still get lonely. Like, I can only get so many additions to my house before it just becomes a big empty house and I'm lonely.
Which, Trix, let me tell you about Sarah Winchester. Anyway.
And so Emily says, like, yeah, I'm lonely too. Richard's not dead, but he's not around. He's on business all the time. I get lonely sometimes too, and I wish you'd understand that. And so and both actresses kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that they understand each other in that moment. And so we cut down to Lorelai talking to Richard, and Lorelai's like trying to be like, hey, Dad, are you okay? I know this is a lot to take in. You know, it was a weird night. And then Richard just starts laughing. Like, do you think he was really wearing a tracksuit? I guess I have a new daddy now. Maybe he'll take me to a ball game. Like, Richard finds...
We can wear matching tracksuits.
Yeah, Richard finds this whole situation hilarious. And so Lorelai and Richard actually have a nice moment together where they just laugh about it. And then Emily comes down and she's fetching tea because she and Trix are going to have tea. And Richard, for a moment, gets a little worried, like, I don't know if I'm okay with my mom and my wife having an alliance against me. But then, you know, Trix sends a servant down to make sure that Emily knows how to make tea. So we can see that they haven't totally made up. That's basically where that plot ends. The Rory plot is that Jess has been really bad at communication.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
shocker.
Yeah, he says, like, oh, let's do something after I get off work, and then just never calls. And, like, oh, because he had to pick up a second shift, and so he didn't
tell her.
Yeah, he didn't tell her this, but, like, oh, he had to pick up a second shift, and he didn't get off until after midnight, and that was too late to call. But he's just not communicating this with Rory, and she's a person who wants a plan. He's like, oh, don't do plans. Which, you know, whatever. So, this is a problem. She spends a good chunk of the beginning of the episode just waiting for him to call all night, and he never does, so she spends her entire Friday night just, like, cleaning her computer and, you know, answering old emails and sort of puttering around and grumpily waiting for him to call. And Lorelai tells her, like, okay, you need to understand, Dean was the kind of guy who would call when he said he'd call. Jess isn't that kind of guy. Not necessarily saying Jess is worse, but Jess is different. But also, she does the whole thing again that I hate of, like, but Dean was really, really great, and he was a great first boyfriend. Like, no!
He wasn't.
Damn it!
He wasn't. Controlling.
He was controlling and jealous and borderline abusive in some places. Like, I hate that they keep pushing this Dean was great narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get into that later, but she's trying to tell Rory, like, you need to tell him these things are bothering you.
Yeah.
Which, on the one hand, Jess should know to call, but on the other hand, fair. If something's bothering her, she should say so.
Yeah.
I can see both sides there. And she doesn't. She just, like, gives him the cold shoulder. And Lorelai tries to tell Jess on numerous occasions throughout the episode of, like, look, this is why Rory is upset with you, and this is what you need to do to rectify. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And, like, no, Jess, she's being snarky about it because she's Lorelai, but she's trying to help you.
But it also gets into Lorelai is a busybody in her daughter's relationship.
It does also get into Lorelai's a busybody in her daughter's relationship, but she is legitimately trying to help. She's trying to help.
And she's not wrong.
No, she's not wrong. So it gets to a point where, like, it's Saturday night, and Jess still isn't, like, calling, and Rory decides, like, you know what? I'm just gonna go out. So she goes out to the hockey game with Lane and Young Chu, who is her fake boyfriend.
Yeah.
Because Young Chu is her fake boyfriend that Mrs. Kim set her up with, and he also has a fake, like, Lane's gonna be his fake girlfriend, because he also has a real girlfriend, who's a Japanese girl named Karen?
Something like that.
And so they've made a plan together where they're going to go on a couple dates together and then break up in the hopes that that'll guilt their parents into letting them date the people they really want to date.
And, like, Dave is in on this.
Yeah, Dave is in on it. Young Chu's girlfriend is in on it, but obviously not as cool with it as Dave. She's jealous. She has to be on the phone with Young Chu the entire time throughout the date and even, like, has to talk to Lane to make sure she's not trying to steal her man.
Yeah.
And everything. So Rory goes to this hockey game with Lane and Young Chu. And apparently Dean's on the hockey team.
Apparently.
And there it's like the regional semifinals, which the team hasn't made it this far for 40 years, which really reminded me of the episode of Community where they were making fun of Glee, where it's like there's regionals and then regional semifinals and then regional finals, but then you go to state. So there's state regionals. It's like regional semifinals are, it's perfect because this, those words that get thrown out in high school that don't fucking mean anything. And it's, everyone's like, oh man, we're going to regional semifinals. I'm like, I have no fucking idea what that means, but good for you.
Yeah, no, I remember my high school gym had tons of pennants up on the walls of teams past, like, victories.
Right.
Tons of regionals. I still don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, like, yeah, it's just like, okay, cool, good for you. That doesn't actually mean anything.
But I'm proud.
Sure,
of you.
I guess.
You seem happy.
I mean, I was actively not, but okay.
They achieved something, Grant.
Did they, though?
Probably.
I feel like that's like the participation trophy thing, where if you just keep subdividing the teams enough, you'll get to a thing where you're the only people in the regional semi-quarterly final semis. And you get a pennant, even though you didn't actually win any games. Anyway. So this is happening, and they run into another girl from Stars Hollow High, and she's kind of awkward. And Rory's like, hey, we haven't really talked since I left school. How are you doing?
Yeah, Lindsay.
Lindsay, yeah, Lindsay. And it seems like they were kind of sort of friends. And so, yeah, but she's super awkward. And Lane's like, oh, it's probably because everyone thinks you're a snob now that you go to Chilton.
What?
And she's like, what? People think that? But no, because in between periods at the hockey game, you see that Dean and Lindsay are making out.
It's like, oh,
she's awkward because she's Dean's new girlfriend. That makes sense. So they lose the game. Rory runs into Dean after the game. He's like, hey, I ran into Lindsay. She seems pretty cool. Good for you. And he's like, yeah, it's really great. How are things going with Jess? And she lies and says, good. And so Jess had told Lorelai had told Jess earlier that Rory was at the hockey game. So as they're leaving, Rory kind of realizes, like, I need to stand up for myself here. So she goes to a payphone and leaves a message at Luke and Jess's place and says, look, I want us to have a schedule now. I'm not dealing with this sitting by the phone thing anymore. We want to make a plan with a date and a time, and then you show up at that date and that time when we go out and we do things. Because maybe that makes me spoiled, but I want to be spoiled in this particular regard. Which, on the one hand, I feel is a dark portent of Rory things to come. But on the other hand, isn't being spoiled.
No.
That's a perfectly reasonable thing to request, well, Rory.
The reason she calls it spoiled is her mom says earlier in the episode that you were spoiled with Dean.
Yeah, because Dean was such a great first boyfriend.
Great first boyfriend.
Ugh. Anyway, so she does all that, and then she goes outside, and, like, it's the perfect teen movie thing where Jess is waiting by his car. He's like,
yeah.
I got us tickets to a concert right now. Let's go. And she's like, yeah, let's go. And by the way, could you just delete that message without listening to it? And it's like, Rory, no!
No! No, he needs to hear that.
We'll get into that. And I think that's basically what happened on Gilmore Girls this week. What happened on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Oh, on Dragon Ball Z Kai, lots of things happened. So if you'll remember from last week, Gohan, Trunks, and Bulma had discovered a second version of Trunks' time machine, not the same model, the exact same time machine, that was time-traveled back 4 years, and something had broken out of it and left an eggshell behind. That thing has obviously molted. They found a shell of it, and it looks like a giant insect of some sort. You know, like glowing eyes, too many arms. It's, you know, not a pleasant thing.
Wings.
Wings. And they try to look around, but they don't find anything, and Bulma's getting creeped out, so she's like, let's get out of here, and Trunks and Gohan, against their better judgment, I would say, are like, yeah, let's go back. So they start flying back to Kame House. Bulma starts taking her little jet plane over to Kame House, which is not quite as, well, it seems quicker than flying, so I don't know why everyone didn't go that way. But whatever. But while Bulma's flying, she's got a TV in her car, and she sees that a town close to where the egg was found and where the molten skin was found, and it was a new molted skin, like it was still gooey.
Mm-hmm.
A town near there, Gingertown.
Gingertown.
You know, named that because everyone loves ginger and has red hair, I guess. I don't know, Gingertown. Gingertown, which is about 4,000 people larger than Stars Hollow.
Yeah, they said 15,000.
15,000 people, so a small town. Gingertown, everyone has disappeared. Everyone has disappeared, leaving their clothing behind. So either they were melted or got kidnapped naked. But it seems more likely that they got melted.
Or like a weird rapture scenario, but only in Gingertown.
Yeah. So she does that thing that people do. And in this case, it actually makes sense. It's not one of those TV things where everyone, like, it just happens to be showing the news story. This seems to be on every station. She calls into Kame House saying, hey, turn on the TV, check this out. This has to do with that shell thing we found. It's right nearby. Bad things are going down. So she calls there. Trunks is apparently enough like his father that he's like, I'm going to go alone. Like, I'm going to go check this out. And Gohan's like, I could come with you. And he's like, no, I can go Super Saiyan. It's fine. And Chi-Chi's like, no, Gohan, don't go. Which,
reasonable.
For once, is reasonable because they're going into a situation they know nothing about, but also Gohan is the only one who would be capable of defending Goku while Goku's still laid up in bed.
Yeah, at this point, Gohan definitely outstrips Krillin. Poor Krillin. But yeah, their two strongest fighters, if Trunks leaves, are Gohan and Krillin. We'll get into that.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, like, that's the plot we have going on. That's the plot we have going on. Meanwhile, Piccolo and Kami are still watching all of this destruction. Piccolo previously had tried to convince Kami to merge with him, and Kami had said no. But now Kami is watching what's happening in Gingertown, obviously, and being the worst communicator. Like,
he's just standing there going, ugh.
Like,
oh no.
We thought Jess was bad. But Kami is worse because he's right there and he doesn't have an excuse. He's standing over going, oh no, there's... Oh, and then Piccolo asks him what's happening, and obviously in a move to keep the audience in the dark, you know, but from a storytelling perspective, making zero sense, Kami says, you'll know after we merge, I can't waste time telling you, and Piccolo, like, you know, a girl who wants to go to the prom, is like, we can merge? Oh, I've been waiting for this. Okay. So they merge. And Mr. Popo is very sad about it. And I would say, let's get into that later. But I am not properly equipped to say how problematic
Mr. Popo is.
Mr. Popo in general. I mean, like, for people who haven't seen the show, he is...
Well, he's a super black caricature.
Yeah, no, he's a blackface stereotype. Like, you could see Mr. Popo in an old school, like, vaudeville show, and he would be uncomfortable even there.
Yeah,
because, like, he's also dressed up like a genie?
Yeah, legit pitch black skin, big, thick red lips.
Like,
And he wears, like, a turban and a little vest, and he's Kami's manservant.
He's Kami's manservant, so he's, like, it's all the problematic things about black people being slaves and genies being slaves all shoved together. But then in this episode, like, he's talking about how much he's going to miss Kami and how sad he is that his master is going to be gone. And I am not the person who's equipped to deal with how problematic that is, except to say it made me feel deeply uncomfortable.
It's definitely, it's a thing.
Yeah, so they decide to merge, and Mr. Popo says, you know, Kami, if you're in there, I don't even remember what he said. I wasn't paying attention at that point since I was so uncomfortable. Basically, I'll miss you.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe in you. Whatever. The Namekian turns back and says, I am no longer Kami or Piccolo, just a Namekian who has long forgotten his true name, and smiles. So this is obviously not either of them, really. It's them together in this weird thing. The artist formerly known as Piccolo goes down to Ginger Town and is looking around to try to figure out what's happened, because it's obvious that Kami decided to merge because of whatever was happening in Ginger Town. And they come across what I'm guessing is Cell. I mean, like, I'm sure they'll give it a name later, but it's easier just to say Cell. Last time we saw Cell, he was a giant insect, but at this point he's bipedal. He looks, like, much more human. He's still got a weird mouth thing going on.
I fucking love Cell's design.
Oh, no, it's gorgeous.
When we get into what we think of it, we can talk about how much I love that reveal of Cell.
Yeah.
Because it's really good.
The other side plot is Android 18 stole some clothes and killed some cops.
We saw the cops in the car afterward. The cops are all okay.
Okay.
Despite the fact that no human being could have survived that rollover.
Yeah, no, so now she's unhappily dressed like a cowboy.
But it is important that the cops are still okay, because it is important to note, so far in this timeline, the androids haven't killed anybody.
Yeah, no, Vegeta has.
Vegeta killed that one trucker. The androids haven't killed anybody in this timeline. That's important to remember.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That is what happened on Dragon Ball. What did you think of Gilmore Girls?
This was a pretty good episode of Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
I really, really, really liked the plot with Emily.
Yep.
I think that, you know, it's not new for the show to humanize Emily.
But vulnerable Emily is best Emily.
Vulnerable Emily is best Emily, and it's been a while since we've gotten some good vulnerable Emily. So that was really good. I really liked that they took what was originally a very broad joke of just, like, Richard's mother is horrible, and they managed to dig down and humanize it in a way where they kind of humanized Trix a little bit at the end of this episode, and in so doing humanized Emily in a really interesting way, and pulled a really good story out of the fact that they obviously just couldn't quite get Edward Herrmann as much this season as they could for previous seasons.
Well, and the thing I like is it became very clear that Trix is just as trapped by her view of the world as Emily is.
Yeah.
Because we've been focusing on Emily, like, oh, she needs flowers that are shorter. She needs, like, she brings her own mattress. It's ridiculous. But, and we've known that Trix has a very limited idea of what's acceptable, even more limited than Emily's. But when she's talking about this man, she's like, I marry for life, and when I'm lonely, I build a solarium. Like, she has this idea that it's completely and utterly unacceptable to have a human need for companionship.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you have that, you have to sneak it around. You should be ashamed of being lonely, almost. And when she's talking about this man, you know, her companion, she says, tonight utterly changed our relationship.
Well, she says they've been together for years.
They've been together for years. This is someone who's obviously deeply important to her, who she keeps, like, I have some questions about how the U.S. London things work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's even possible he moved.
It's true. I have a lot of questions about her social circle that we'll get into.
Yeah. But I think the fact that just people knowing about their relationship so deeply changes their relationship says a lot about why they chose to have a secret relationship. And how much that hurts Trix, and how much Emily sees that it hurts Trix.
Absolutely.
And that was really interesting.
It was really cool. I really, really dug it. I like when we
You dug that emotional complexity.
I did. I like when we get a Lorelai-Emily plot that isn't confrontational between Lorelai and Emily.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Lorelai and Emily butting heads has gotten a little played out at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to see them kind of being in each other's corner. And Lorelai was definitely in her mom's corner this episode, and it was nice to see that change in their relationship. And we only saw, we didn't get very much Richard in this episode, but the little bit that we got was great. I really, really loved that scene of him just laughing on the couch about it, because it was so unexpected. Like, I expected it to be Richard, like, a little taken aback, and not necessarily disapproving, but surprised and confused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know Mother had taken a suitor, and this is so strange, and I'm not used to it. And, you know, obviously I want her to be happy, but this is going to take some time to adjust. Like, I was expecting that from him. Oh. And I'm sure that he could have killed that scene, but that such different response of, like, where you kind of assume of, you kind of figure he assumed, of course, his mother had boyfriends, because
uh-huh.
his dad's been gone for a long time. Like, yeah, of course she has boyfriends.
Well, and you see the audience and Lorelai's expectation probably also because, I mean, I would say I'm still young enough that I don't want to think about that too much with my parents. I mean, mm-hmm. like, I'm aware that my parents are happy, and I am happy for them, but I'm not going to ask questions.
No.
But Richard is an adult. Like, he's old enough to have children. He's old enough to have grandchildren. Like, he is old enough to be able to accept that part of his mother's life. And I appreciate that they let him have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at one point, I forget even exactly what it was, but at one point, Lorelai made a joke that implied that they were, like, having sex.
Trix and her companion. No, it was the Nike joke. She was like,
oh, yeah, just do it takes on a whole new meaning, yeah. So, like, she's even, like, making it that I feel like in a normal context, which would be like, Lorelai, please, right? But, like, Richard's even willing to laugh about his decrepit old mother's sex life. Like, it showed us a different side of Richard when all his defenses are down.
Yeah.
And the situation obviously just disarmed him, and so he just has to laugh. And so I really, really liked that. The Rory plot I was a little frustrated with. I know we've talked about it before, but I always get really frustrated when they try to play the Dean was so great card.
Yeah.
When not only was Dean not great, but the show obviously went to great lengths and spent a lot of time showing us the reasons why Dean is not great. And yeah, Dean was good about making it to his dates on time and being a communicator, but he also bitched the entire time they were doing something that he didn't want to do on those dates. He was very jealous, he was controlling, he definitely treated Rory like he had ownership over her. There were a lot of problems that I feel like Lorelai is a mature enough adult that she would have recognized, but she still keeps talking Dean up to her daughter after they've been broken up for a while, and I'm just...
It's weird.
It's weird.
Although I did like that in this episode, they dealt with an actual problem that Jess and Rory would have in their relationship where they're grappling with it. Because this is not Jess being out of character. This is a problem this kid would probably
have. This is a problem that Jess would definitely have.
Especially because no one's ever cared where he goes.
No one's ever cared where he's been. Yeah, like, no one has ever cared where he is until
except
he came.
Except
Luke, yeah. He's just generally a bit more of a whatever-go-with-the-flow kind of guy.
His girlfriends probably didn't ask much of him.
Previous girlfriends probably didn't ask much of him. And if he's working two jobs, mm-hmm. his schedule's probably really chaotic.
Yeah.
And so it would make sense that he can't always have a reliable schedule.
Yeah.
Much less keep one. So he's like, almost trying to be considerate and say, like, I can't promise a time because I don't know what my schedule's going to be. Like, he's not doing a good job of communicating that fact, but I can see where that thought process is happening.
Yeah.
So, like, Jess is almost doing the right thing, but in all the wrong ways.
And it's understandable that he would be doing the wrong thing, and it's understandable that Rory would be frustrated, but also have no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah, like, this is an issue between them that's totally on brand for both of them, and so I did really like that.
Yeah.
I feel like it was unnecessary to add Dean to this episode.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you're gonna frame it again in comparison to Dean. Dean yes. did not need to be in this episode.
No.
And it's just dragging him back in and making it a love triangle thing again. It's like, I'm so fucking over it. So that was frustrating to me.
And they were mostly doing it because they want to bring Lindsay in, because she'll pop up more, but
cool,
it's
I don't
annoying.
Care.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't care. I don't care about Dean anymore. I don't. I really, really don't. And maybe something will happen with him in the future to make me care about him again, but at the moment, I don't give a shit about what's going on with Dean in his life. He can go, I'm glad he has a new girlfriend. He can go off and be happy, and maybe he'll have learned the mistakes of how he treated Rory, and they'll have a helpful relationship.
No.
Cool. Good for them. I don't give a shit what's going on in Dean's life. So that's happening. And I also feel like Jess got off the hook too easy this episode.
Definitely Jess got off the hook too easy.
Because, yeah, he showed up at the hockey game and had tickets, and that was nice and thoughtful. But at the same time, if Rory's issue is that she wants a schedule, and he shows up saying, hey, we're going to go to an event right now after you just came back from an event. Let's go. That is sweet, but the opposite of the solution.
Yeah, no, it's sweet that he stood in line to buy tickets, but what about if she had plans?
Yeah, like, it's completely inconsiderate of her time. Or what if she's just tired because she just ate a bunch of junk food and cheered her heart out at a hockey game? Is she really gonna go cheer her heart out at a concert now, too? Like, it was sweet, and it's a good thing she wanted to go, but I could so see that backfiring.
Yeah.
And well, he got off way too easy, because then she's like, oh, delete my message. Like, she's putting off a conversation they need to have, because he did a thing that was nice, but still shows he hasn't learned his lesson.
And I think the other thing is, I'm not saying that TV shows should be didactic. They would be much less interesting if everything was like, and we have a lesson we want you to learn today. But the thing is, lots of young girls are watching Gilmore Girls. Like, I know I was. I know a whole generation of women was. And they were so close to something good. Like, yeah. You can expect your boyfriend to be good to you, to make plans and to keep them. And even more importantly, it is your right to say when you need something.
Yeah.
Like, it is hard when you're a young girl figuring out where the boundaries are in a relationship and what you're allowed to ask for. Because, I mean, I'm not going to get on a whole tangent of how women aren't allowed to need things. But a lot of young women don't think they're allowed to need things. There are exceptions. There are Bulmas. Those are great. But if they had let her get angry at him and stay angry at him, that would have been fantastic. That would have been wonderful. But no, he swoops in with his car and concert tickets, which tells you, like, if you just wait long enough, your boyfriend will get better.
Yeah, well, it felt very much like, hey, I'm sorry I had sex with your best friend, but here's flowers.
Yeah.
Like, that's obviously expanding the situation, but it felt like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know I screwed up. Here is a pretty thing, so you won't be mad at me anymore.
Yeah.
And I felt that was really frustrating. It would have been great if it had been like, hey, I got tickets for this concert. I'm sorry I didn't call. I was standing in line all day. Oh, when's the concert? Tomorrow I'll pick you up at 8.
Yeah.
Like, if it had been something like that.
That would have been fantastic. That would have been
perfect of, like, Jess kind of didn't learn his lesson, but kind of learned his lesson.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's at least trying, and that was great, but no. And
I think this leads, like, shows an issue with Gilmore Girls that, if I remember right, we'll see later, where for Rory and her relationships, and sometimes with Lorelai, because we saw it with Max Medina's proposal, they go for big gestures over actual decent human being.
Yeah.
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 And you'll see that with another boyfriend that Rory has, too.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just got off way too easy. The whole Lane and Young Chu thing is amusing.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of amused by this plot, and I'm curious where it's going to go.
And I like that they let Dave get jealous.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention. Yeah, Dave sees, it's a great scene where Young Chu shows up to pick up Lane for their date, and Mrs. Kim takes a picture, and Dave is like, out in the background of the shot.
Out of focus.
But you can see he's watching the situation like a hawk. And is just deeply uncomfortable with, like, Young Chu got her flowers and everything.
And Mrs. Kim says, like, for the grandkids when she takes a photo, this is a ton of pressure for a first date. If they were, you know, actually together, that might be a problem. But even beyond Dave getting jealous and thinking maybe she'll go with him, I could see Dave getting jealous of how Mrs. Kim is treating this relationship.
Absolutely.
Like, he's worked this hard, and this other guy swoops in, and by being Korean, gets all this love.
Yeah, and so the conceit is that Dave and his band are doing a hymnal trio thing. And so they get a 15-minute break, and he sprints over to the hockey game just to say hi to Lane, and sprints back during the 15-minute break. And so then Lane realizes that Dave is jealous, but, like, cute jealous. And so it's great. And, yeah, so that was a thing that happened. And yeah, so I really liked that. I like where they're going with that. Dave is awesome. I'm glad that it took 3 seasons, but I'm finally into the Lane plot. And I'm going to ride this train for as long as I can.
Yeah.
What did you think of this week's Dragon Ball Z Kai?
You know, when you get a puppy from the shelter And it's obviously been hurt before, because when you reach out to pet it, it, like, shrinks back, and it's tragic.
Okay.
I'm the puppy.
You're the puppy?
I'm the puppy, because, like, this episode gave me a ton of things I wanted. Like...
Yeah, this was a good episode.
This was a good episode. The Gingertown mystery is compelling, and the way that they're doing it is compelling. Like, a lot of scenes use sound for tension. Mm-hmm. They use, like... framing. There was actual effort going into keeping the tension high and making you curious about what this is. Like, they have the kind of long burn mystery of what is this egg? It's been growing over 4 years. It just molted. Oh no. But then they ratcheted it up higher with 15,000 people disappeared. And then in the news broadcast, like, there's gunfire and screaming and then silence, ominous silence. And then the reporter disappears and the feed cuts out.
Yeah.
Like,
or even like, there's, you know, it's like, oh, we're gonna get a little closer. Here's these clothes that were left behind. And obviously the townsfolk tried to defend themselves from whatever happened. And you see the empty clothes with like a rifle next to it.
And the
it's like,
empty
clothes... so this wasn't like a rapture thing. People didn't disappear. This was like somebody tried to fight back.
And the clothes aren't in piles. They are just like, obviously, like, there's a shirt above a pair of pants.
Yeah, literally somebody just vanished out of their clothes while holding a rifle.
And that's so cool. And even just beside, I liked, you know, it was a stupid side thing, but, you know, 18 getting new clothes and just hating them. Like, what's a funny...
It was a nice break.
It was a nice break. It was a funny moment. The tension with Kami and Piccolo, I kind of didn't like how it was executed with Kami.
It was a little clumsily executed.
It was clumsily executed, but I like that... Kami freaking out when he hasn't really freaked out before ratchets up the tension. A lot of things were done really well. The final cell reveal was really cool.
Oh, I love that final. You just see, like, Piccolo's just walking through this empty town. You hear, like, there's a faucet dripping,
mm-hmm.
but it's quiet. And you just hear, like, Piccolo's footsteps echoing as he's kind of walking through this town. And then you hear just that weird, like, p-ting, p-ting sound that Cell's feet make. And you just see, like, the silhouette of, like, his crowned head go by, and his tail wriggling.
Yeah, you see just different parts of him.
Oh, it was so good.
It was like a horror movie mixed with a Western, and I was here for it.
Yeah, that is kind of what it was like. That is exactly what it was like.
Because, I mean, it's the gunslinger walking into the empty town where everyone has fled, but it's also, like, the you don't show the whole monster, but then you do, and it's, you're right, it's a great design. It's angular, it's creepy, it's human, it's not the whole mouth thing.
He's got that weird, yeah, that weird mouth thing.
Yeah, no, because his mouth is just like a bulb with lines across it. It's unnerving.
And his tail. I love his tail. It's like a weird wiggly noodly thing, but with like a weird little syringe thing on the end.
Yeah, no, it's creepy. The thing that makes me sad about how much I like this...
is, you know, it's all about to go away.
It's all about to go away. Like, this is... Actually, no, it's not like a puppy. It's like an, like, orphan child who, like, can't love its new family because it doesn't trust them to stay. I don't trust this to stay. It's all, like, they put all their work into this episode and making it tense, and they've done their work for the season now. They're done. They can just have people punch each other. Like, that's what's gonna happen, and I know it, and I'm sad. That's how I felt. What questions do you have about Gilmore Girls? Because I've got a couple.
I've got a lot of questions about Gilmore Girls. Okay, first, I really want to understand how Trix's social circle works, because she lived in London.
Right.
And she's lived in London until very recently, but she has this boyfriend that she's had for years and, like, this social circle that obviously they've been together for a long time. So did they all migrate from London, or has she been, like, their weird remote member? But, like, this is 2003. Like,
She doesn't Skype?
No, she's not going to Skype in. She's an old woman in 2003. So, like, what?
Okay, so I think what's going on here is a couple things. I don't pretend to know how the boyfriend works. My guess is that he moved with her. Like,
if they've been together for a couple years, he might move with her.
This is a serious enough relationship where they would probably move together. Like, even though he would probably be her husband if she was cool with that. So he is probably staying with her. The Biddies, I don't think are her, like, close friends necessarily. Like, these are people she works with. They're in her social circle. But if you think about it, like, before she went to London, for a long time, Trix grew up in Connecticut. Like,
that's
she
true.
Had groundings there, she had money, she had connections to organizations. She probably still sent money to the organizations when she was in London, maybe called, I doubt it. But the thing is, when she comes back, even if she hasn't been in touch with these organizations for years, these are people she knows. She has the connections to, like, plug back into the events that she would be interested in.
That makes sense.
So I don't really question that as much.
Okay. At one point... Okay, so part of the thing is that Taylor's entire family is coming in to see this hockey game.
Yep.
Because they're hockey people. Taylor gives them, their brochures have a map of Stars Hollow. If they're all a hockey family, didn't they grow up in Stars Hollow?
Yes, they did, and that's the
I know they
the
lampshade
joke.
It.
Yeah, that's the joke, is that Taylor's the only member of his family who's like this.
I did love that. Yeah, Taylor's the only, like, you expect, like, oh god, it's a swarm of Taylors. But they do have a joke where Taylor's the only member of his family who's like this. And somebody says, like, a tour of the town? We all grew up here. Why do we want a tour of the town?
I'm gonna take a nap.
Yeah, like, and they all, like, they all hate Taylor. Because they all also think he's a horrible busybody. So they all graduated from Dementia Town, except Taylor, who never quite grew out of it. And so they keep him there.
Yeah.
It feels good to have a Dementia Town thing to say again. I don't think I've had much to say about Dementia Town all season.
Yeah.
I think it's because it's just sort of, I've become assimilated to it.
Yeah. You are a member of Dementia Town.
I have. I am at Dementia Town now. Emily's excuse for showing up at the inn is that she wants to host the DAR meetings there, DAR meeting there. Didn't they already host her
yes.
DAR meetings there after the bank episode?
Yes, and I feel like they could have written this better, because if, what they could have done, and it would have been very easy, was like, I want to have my next DAR meeting here. It's like, Mom.
You already have your DAR meeting here. Why are you really here?
Yeah, or let's set up the details. I mean, it seems like she's probably still having the DAR meetings because when she says, let's set up the meeting, and she's like, okay, what day? The 15th. Emily doesn't try to stall by saying, okay, well, what will we do with the menu? What will we do with the things? Like, this seems to be a routine procedure, but they didn't write it that way, and that was weird.
Yeah. Okay. Dean plays hockey now?
I mean, sure.
If Dean plays hockey, and he and Rory dated for 2 years, how has Rory never been to a hockey game?
See, you're asking the wrong question here. It could be that he's just started playing hockey this year. I mean, like, kids do start playing sports in later years. It is kind of weird that he didn't play it previously, because, I mean, he's from Chicago. Like, you guys love your Blackhawks.
Well, that's a recent phenomenon.
That's true. That wasn't happening in 2003. But, I mean, it is a cold enough area that it's possible that he played hockey.
Right.
Why Rory didn't go is a weird question. But the even weirder question is Rory acts like this is the first time she's gone to a Dean sports event. That's not true.
It's true. She's shown up at his softball games,
mm-hmm.
or his baseball games before.
Softball.
It was softball, yeah. She's shown up at his softball games before. Yeah, now she hasn't, like, sports are weird. Like, now you've been to sports games before.
Yeah. I have one that I can't answer the question, like, what is this HIM event? It's not weird that it's on a Saturday. They're Seventh-day Adventists. They have services Saturday morning, because Seventh-day Adventists, seventh day, they still keep the Sabbath, like Jews do. But the event seems to be three guys play hymns in front of a crowd, and they sit there smiling and nodding. Like, it is weird to have a church, like, it is weird to have a traditional hymn event where they aren't, you know, like, all the people in the audience aren't there with their own hymnal singing along, because the point of singing hymns is that everyone knows them.
That was a very creepy shot of them just, like, playing just, like, Amazing Grace on their guitars while just a bunch of old Korean people just smile and nod. Like,
yeah,
isn't the point of hymns that you sing along?
You do, and, like, that could have had some great moments, because part of the joke earlier in the episode is that Zach doesn't know the words to hymns, and so he's like,
he rewrites them to be weird.
Yeah, so
or to be simpler, rather.
Yeah, so he's looking at A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, and he's like, what's a bulwark, you know? And he's like, and so he changes it to, like, a wall 10 stories high, and, you know, some other things where he simplifies it for Zach Brain, because Zach is not bright. And I want to see all the old Koreans trying to sing along and failing.
Yeah, there was no fallout to that. I was expecting Mrs. Kim to have something to say about how, like, you think Mrs. Kim, who's very, very traditional, very strict, would have something to say about changing the words to a song that is supposed to be in praise of God.
Yeah.
You'd think she'd take that very seriously.
And, like, most Christians wouldn't, because it's not written by God, but you'd feel like Mrs. Kim would.
Oh, Mrs. Kim absolutely would, because I feel like Mrs. Kim would insist they were written by God, even though they aren't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a little weird.
Or even that they're written by people in service of God, and we respect that.
Yeah, or something, right?
Yeah, it was weird.
So I know this is a question that where the answer might come up later, but what happened to Evil Dean? Is Evil Dean just gone now? Or is Lindsay, like, is this, like, an All According to Keikaku thing, where Lindsay is part of the deep cover plan to do his Evil Dean machinations, or if the writers realized Evil Dean is fucking ridiculous and dropped it?
I think it might have been that he's realized that this tactic doesn't work. And you'll kind of see, and this is a little spoiler, but whatever, it's obvious that he got together with someone very quickly to get over Rory as quickly as possible.
Right, I figure it was going to be something like that, but I'm curious how...
Yeah, the Evil Dean...
How much of a mastermind Dean's being, because they definitely played up in, like, the Winter Festival episode, they played off Dean as, like...
A manipulative
puppet mastermind, right? You know,
he got a girl to go to the fair with him.
I've got a plan, Jess, and you can't stop me. Like, he definitely was playing, like, the anime genius role.
Well, if this is a plan to, you know, it kind of works out, but he has to go much deeper than he thought he would. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, so those are all my questions about Gilmore Girls. Do you have questions about Dragon Ball Z?
I have two, and it's this, the one that, like, I don't think they have answers. One is when they see the shell of what used to be Cell, they say, oh, it looks like it came from the egg in the time machine. That seems like a little bit of a logical leap. I mean, I know it's a weird egg, weird molted thing, but, like, they said it like they were sure, not like, it probably, it was like, it definitely came from this. That's not really a question. My real question is just, so Trunks and Gohan see there's a giant bug that looks dangerous. It came from a time machine. It, like, somebody obviously sent it back into the past to do major mischief. And their solution is, let's leave and figure it out later. No biggie. What?
I think that they're still really fixated on the androids.
They are.
And, like, this is a threat they don't understand, whereas the androids are a threat they do understand, and as far as they're concerned, is very imminent. The androids could show up any minute,
yeah.
And Goku is still completely out of commission.
Yeah.
He's obviously, like, Chi-Chi has a line about how he's obviously through the worst of it now, where he's sleeping a little more soundly, he's resting. And, like, we even get a shot of him, and he looks more like he's just conked out.
Yeah.
Where, like, his limbs are all askew, and he's, like, snoring or whatever. So Goku's obviously on the mend. He'll probably be up and ready to rumble soon.
Right, but that makes it even more confusing, where he seems fine for now, and, like, they're not great, but Yamcha and Krillin are there. They could sound the alarm. So they have a few hours to look for this bug. But instead they're like, nope, let's go. Not even trying to, like, sense if there's a strong power, like, if there's any weird power levels in the area.
Well, they did. I mean, they tried to, like, wait, do you sense anything around? And they thought they sensed something, and it was just, like, a weird little cute forest creature, and they're like, okay, there's nothing near here. So let's go back to Kame House and regroup.
But don't, like, circle the area or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. They're just like, let's just go back to Kame House and regroup.
This all could have been prevented.
I mean, theoretically.
Theoretically. Okay, so who do you want to swap? Actually, I've got one if you want to.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, who do you want to swap this week?
So I'm going to do the swap that would cause the most damage.
Okay.
So I want to swap Bulma and Jess.
Okay.
So on one side, I want Jess to be there and watch the news report and go like, okay, and then fly back to Kame House. And just when he gets there, not tell them anything about Cell attacking this town. They're going to go on and then, like, you know, Ginger House is going to be gone. Ginseng Town is going to be gone. Garlic Town is just wiped out. And, you know, a few weeks later, he's like, oh, yeah, I saw that. And that's what I want on the Dragon Ball side. On the Gilmore Girls side, I want Rory to get up in Bulma's face for not calling and telling her where she'd be. And Bulma would...
Oh, Bulma would not stand for that.
Bulma would not stand for that. Bulma is a delicate flower who doesn't need to tell you where she is. Also, where's Vegeta?
Also, she's been really busy with motherhood.
Also, she's been so busy with motherhood. Also, you just don't understand what it takes to be a beautiful, delicate flower, a mother, and a scientist at the same time.
It's true. Bulma's life is very hard.
And then Rory would just feel so bad she'd never ask for anything in a relationship ever again.
It's true. It would break Rory forever.
So who do you want to swap?
I want to swap Trix and Goku.
Okay.
Because...
Oh, no.
I really want to see Trix laid up in bed making demands of Chi-Chi and Krillin... And Master Roshi.
And it would go much better. Like, I feel like Chi-Chi wouldn't stand for it.
Oh, Chi-Chi would absolutely not stand for it.
Krillin would get bowled over like a pin.
As would Yamcha.
as would Yamcha, and then Roshi would just be creepy and get slapped to, like,
heck. I don't think he would. I think, because he obviously likes him young.
Trix still's got it. We haven't seen how he reacts to anyone who isn't taken and isn't in a porn mag.
Maybe. Either way, you're right, he would get the shit slapped out of him.
Yep.
Because either he would try to hit on her, or he would make some remark about how, oh, I bet you were hot when you were younger, shame what time does to you, or something like that.
Exactly.
And either way, he'd get the shit slapped out of him. Yeah, and then I feel like Trunks would just try to be a good boy and bring her tea, as would Gohan.
Yeah.
They'd just be good little boys and be nice to her. And then at the same time, Emily would get a nice break, because yeah. I feel like Goku would be easy to take care of in his current state.
In his current state, he would Although be super
she,
easy.
Yeah, she gave Lorelai and Roy flack for eating too fast in this episode. Wait till she sees Goku. Yeah, so that's who I want to swap this week.
Pretty good. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Facebook, Twitter, and WordPress are all GilmoreBaltZ. Email is GilmoreBaltZ@gmail.com. Reddit is rGilmoreBaltZ. Rate us if you think about it. We love seeing those. Thanks, and have a great week.
Yep, we'll see you next Saturday. So, what did happen to Gingertown? What does Lindsay see in Dean? I bet it's his pretty hair. And who's a worse communicator, Jess or Kami? Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.